This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Music. We're back. Hey, everyone. How's it going? You're listening to The Command Zone. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
Haven't seen you in 3 weeks, Josh.
Holy cow. It's crazy. It's good to be back on the mic.
Where were you?
In
case people don't know from us talking about it.
We've talked about it, or we did talk about it in all the episodes, I think. I was in, basically, Asia.
That's pretty good.
I was in Korea, Singapore, Vietnam, Cambodia, Thailand, all around those areas. Had a great time. We'll talk about it a little bit more on the end step. I know people... Well, we've got a lot of probably new listeners here because we have something exciting.
We have a spoiler.
We have a Battle for Zendikar spoiler card.
Bing, 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 bing. It's really sweet. I can't wait to talk about it.
It's pretty awesome. It's... We're going to talk about it later in the episode. If you're here only for that, which I'm sure a lot of you are, then you can look in the show notes and we'll put a time code of where you can go to just listen to that right away. Otherwise, we're going to talk about our main topic and then we'll do the spoiler near the end to keep you all in suspense because that's what good storytellers do.
Yeah, that's right. And after that, we're going to talk about your trip to Asia.
Right.
A little bit.
Yeah, we'll touch on that. So those interested, I don't know, all five of you can stick around for that.
I'm one of them, so all four of you.
There's only four others
left. There you go, yeah. Well, just based on all the food you tweeted out, I just want to know about that.
It was definitely a food tour was a big part of it.
Yeah.
So we had some good eats. Singapore was awesome. About the spoiler, one more thing.
Oh, yeah.
Just for those people that haven't skipped forward.
All two of you.
All two of you.
The number keeps going down.
It's a rare... land.
A land,
and it's rare, and it's playable in all EDH decks.
Yeah, absolutely. It's playable in every single EDH deck.
So if that doesn't get you excited, I don't know what will.
I think it's already going to go into probably three decks that I own.
Yeah, it's, I mean, geez. Yeah, at least that many for me, too. It's definitely very, very usable.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's a land.
It's a land, yeah.
Any new lands that you get that are usable are going to be awesome because they don't take a slot in your deck, really. So it's just like, it's just net positive for most of your decks.
Yep. Again, if you guys want to see that spoiler, it's the time code's in the more info box below. But we're going to talk about some other cool stuff instead because 3 weeks have gone by. A lot of stuff has happened.
Yeah. So I missed out on like all this crazy, awesome stuff. You were at PAX.
Mm-hmm. I was at PAX.
Tons of announcements got made. Worlds happened.
Battle for Zendikar spoilers everywhere. It's very exciting.
Yeah, lots of like spoilers, not just of cards, but of like what the new mechanics are. And you sort of getting an idea for what that set's going to look like.
First off, though, let's talk about the Community Cup, which is happening this weekend. If you guys are listening to this show right now, we're releasing this show early. Usually we do Tuesdays and Thursdays. But we're releasing the show on a Monday, and the Community Cup is happening this weekend. I'm in it. Woohoo!
Yeah!
It's going to be...
representing EDH, baby!
Representing, yeah. Me and Staborski are the two EDH players. We'll be there Saturday, so the 19th and the 20th on Sunday. So you can just stream all of it on Twitch.
Yeah, you should definitely check it out on Twitch, because Jimmy will be part of the team that is kicking the crap out of the Wizards team people on Moto can get... free something. What do we get?
Oh, yeah. So if the wizard side wins, every person on Moto gets a Drown in Sorrow from Theros Block.
A Drown in sorrow, because we'll all be drowning
not
in sorrow.
Not foil, nothing special, just a regular uncommon. However, if the community team wins, then every person on Moto gets a full set of the John Avon lands from Unhinged. And they're those beautiful full art lands. So,
ooh, that's pretty sick.
You get to pimp out your decks just a little bit.
So they really want the entire community to be rooting for you guys.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully they also lose purposely. I'm just kidding. Play as hard as you can, guys. Please.
No, they try and win, I'm sure, because they get rubbed in their faces about how they've basically only won a couple of times.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully this will not be one of those times.
Yeah, don't let that happen, Jimmy. You represent us all, man.
I know. Oh, gosh. The pressure is on.
The pressure. Yeah, Community Cup, very exciting. Make sure to tune into that on the Twitch stream. You can check out that link. We'll also be in the show notes.
Yeah, hopefully they do some multiplayer stuff. That'd be really exciting to see.
I know, it's too bad something like Conspiracy or something like that didn't come out around this time. I mean, my guess is, and I don't know if they've told you or anything, that you'll be doing something with... Oh, you haven't heard anything?
No. But I'm with you on this guess.
I'm going to predict there you guys will get to do at least a pre-release, hopefully like a draft or something with the Battle for Zendikar stuff.
Yeah, because the pre-release happens a week after the Community Cup, and last year's Community Cup, they did Khans of Tarkir stuff. So it would follow in tradition to help hype up the new set, and... Oh, no, that gives Wizards a huge edge.
Yeah, it does. But on the other side, you're one of the people that's going to be like the first introducing the world to the new set in the limited environment. So, come on, that's pretty awesome.
Can't wait to punt everything. Just misplays on misplays.
I'm going to be there in chat, like, pointing out every mistake you make.
You and literally everyone else. So, yeah, hooray. So, yeah, that'd be really fun. Twitch.tv/magic. You can find all that this weekend on the Magic Twitch channel. PAX happened. PAX was huge this year. I'll break it down for you, Josh, because you weren't there, unfortunately. Next year, though, are you coming?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to come this year. It just so happened it didn't work out. So unless something crazy happens, I'm definitely there because it looks like so much fun.
Yeah, definitely. So this is like the biggest year I think Wizards has ever had at PAX. If you guys don't know, PAX is the Penny Arcade Expo. Penny Arcade is a online webcomic that's been around since, I don't know, like the mid-90s now? I don't know. It's been around
about as long as anything online has existed.
Yeah, it's probably the most famous webcomic / the original sort of big daddy of webcomics. It's the one that spawned almost everything else. And now they have multiple conventions in New York. They have PAX South. PAX Prime is the main one in Seattle. And Wizards had a huge setup this year. They took over an entire building called The Annex, which is across the way from the convention center. You guys probably saw a lot of pictures of this. There was a giant Eldrazi that was like popping out of the front. Crushing a police car. And, like,
yeah, it was Emrakul, right? Was like literally picking up part of a police car.
I don't know if they gave the Eldrazi a name, but it looked like
Like the tentacles from
Emrakul. Yeah, or like, yeah, it could have been like a tiny part of Emrakul. Uh-huh. I'm guessing he's giant. But it was really cool. Inside, they were really focused on teaching new players stuff. The Lady Planeswalker Society was there.
Very cool.
I got to meet Mike and Tifa Robles as well, which was really awesome. And they were teaching new players how to play. Downstairs and upstairs, they're doing Worlds coverage.
So oh, right, because Worlds happens at PAX. Or
now
happened.
It will, yeah, from now on.
It happened this year at PAX, right?
Yeah, I think in the past it happened later in some other month, but they wanted to converge it all at PAX because people can watch it, and it's a great way to bring publicity to the pro scene in a way that's, you know, organic and fun, and there's so many people running around PAX, I think it was a really effective way of doing it.
Another thing I missed.
Yeah, it's okay, though. It's okay. They didn't play any EDH at Worlds for whatever reason.
For whatever reason.
Yeah, it was cool seeing Marshall and those guys and BDM and everyone just up on the stage broadcasting live, because usually they're like hidden in the booth somewhere, but this time they were very public and out there, so everyone walking by could see them commentate on stuff, which is really cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, if you wanted to play Magic, you could do Rise of the Eldrazi flashback drafts. You drafted Rise, right?
Oh, that's my favorite draft format. And I learned it was on Moto again while I was gone. So two more things I missed.
It's okay. You experienced the beauty of Asia.
Yeah, that's true.
I played in two and I tanked both in the first round. It sucked. I lost.
You drafted Rise much?
I did it twice before I went to PAX because I was like, I want to train. And I 3-0'd one draft and 2-1 the other one.
So, oh,
I
so
like,
you oh, thought you were good.
Yeah. It turns out Eldrazi Conscription is a card.
Yep.
And so is Aura Gnarled. And I was not equipped.
Aura Gnarled's a whole deck, yeah.
Yeah, that's a whole deck. Yeah. I had 3 Narcolepsies in my deck, too, and I just never drew one. Yeah, it was terrible. I was taking 4, and he was drawing off his Umbras. I was like, I'm dying. I'm dead. And they also did live podcasts for Limited Resources and Drive to Work, which is really cool. I didn't get to see those. And then I participated in the thing on Saturday where you get people can line up to play against like me or Will Wheaton or any like members from the R&D team, and they'll play a deck from Battle for Zendikar. So an Allies deck, a red-green landfall deck, or a mono-white sort of weenie deck.
Were these decks like 100% cards from Battle for Zendikar, or would they just have a few?
I think it was a, you know, Melissa DeTora put an article up because she did help design the decks, and I think it was a good mix. I'm not sure because a lot of the cards...
They could be reprints, so you don't always know.
And a lot of them were also like Nest Invader was in the deck that I used, and the new, if you guys have read, the new Eldrazi tokens are 1/1s instead of 0/1s.
So Nest Invader probably isn't in the set.
Probably not,
but we can't say for sure.
Yeah, we can't say for sure. We're not entirely sure. So we played like a black-green Eldrazi deck against all these kids and people that are lined up. It was really fun. I got beat by a little kid. Was it
Jack Landis?
No, but his name was Lil J.
Huh.
So Marshall knew him quite well.
Oh, really?
And he crap talked me. I was like, oh man.
He did? He talked trash to you?
Yeah. Well, awesome. He just had like so much confidence going in. I was like, that's how you be a good player as a child.
Did he flick the cards really fast?
He was flicking faster.
I wonder if it was Jack, although no, Jack would have introduced himself.
Yeah, I would have seen if it was Jack. It was cool. There was the giant Magic announcement thing with Mark Rosewater that was hosted by Will Wheaton and Ashley Birch. The Magic party. Lots of good stuff.
We should say it's pretty cool that Ashley was involved because she's a rocket jumper.
Yeah, that's right. She's going to be very prominently featured in the Hulu show for Rocket Jump.
Yeah, if you have not checked it out, you should go to rocketjump.com. They've got a big show coming out on Hulu. It's called Rocket Jump The Show.
very original title.
Yeah, it's a bunch of shorts, a bunch of Rocket Jump sort of... their patented movies to make a sort of effects-driven, action-driven, comedy-driven shorts. Mm-hmm. And then those usually come out on their YouTube channel. But the show is actually those shorts preceded by a sort of documentary about how they made the short. So it's very cool. I've seen most of the shorts
at this point.
Yeah, they're very funny. They're really great. They're big. The budgets for a lot of these just seem to be bigger than even a lot of the stuff on the Rocket Jump channel. So... as a side note, definitely go check out the trailer for the show is out, or the teaser, maybe not the trailer yet, and you should be anxiously anticipating the show because it looks sweet.
Yeah, I'll put all the links and stuff in the...
And Jimmy makes an appearance.
I make an appearance, yeah, in one of the shorts. My favorite short, I think, is that one. It's one of my two favorites, I think.
It's a good one. Yes. The main one that Ashley's in is probably my favorite.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. And she directed that one.
Yeah, she's a really good director. Did she direct a couple of them?
No, just that one.
Just that one?
And it was the first time she directed something really? On that scale as well, yeah.
So. Yeah, she did an amazing job then. Yeah. So, super talented, super excited to have her be part of the Magic world, at least a little bit, at PAX. That was exciting to see.
We'll give her an EDH deck and introduce her to the fray, maybe. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, if she's going to be up there in front of people representing it, we should get some more people, involved with Commander in there.
Heck yeah. Worlds. So Worlds was 24 players, the best players in the world convening at PAX. They did Modern Masters drafts. They did. They played Modern, Standard, and Origins drafts as well. Seth Manfield won the whole thing. $50,000.
$50K? Wow.
He has a newborn baby, too, so it was very fitting that...
So he earned about 1/6 of that kid's college education?
Yeah, he earned about a semester and a half, maybe.
Yeah.
So he's just got to
win Worlds like 5 more times. That's college.
That's pretty good. Shahar Shanar did 2 years in a row. So Seth can just, triple that.
Yeah, you can just rattle it off. No problem. Yeah,
there's no variance involved in that. So the Magic announcements was sweet. They spoiled tons of stuff. There's like the new Gideon, the new Ulamog. We know that the main mechanics of Battle for Zendikar now are landfall, which is returning. So whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, it does something. Rally, whenever a card that has an ally or that card or another ally enters the battlefield, something happens. Ingest, which is definitely the new one.
This is sort of the big splashy new one.
Yeah, it's the new Eldrazi thing. Because before it was Annihilator, and that was kind of busted. It meant you had to sacrifice permanents equal to the Annihilator number when the creature attacked.
Yeah, Annihilator was very powerful, but it felt like once somebody activated Annihilator one time, you couldn't win anymore. So there was no coming back.
Unless you had like a bunch of lands to sacrifice. But even then, like a giant 8/8 coming at you is kind of hard.
That's bad enough. And if you also have to sack 2 permanents, it's just like really hard. So how's Ingest work exactly?
It's so whenever the creature deals combat damage, you exile the top card of your library. I think we have yet to see if the Ingest will come with a number, like Ingest 5, or if it'll just
I know
say,
there are some that say exile the top 4 cards of your library or something.
Yeah, Ulamog exiles the top 20 cards whenever he hits you, which is pretty intense. Actually, I think it's just when he attacks. Anyway, Annihilator was whenever you attacked, And ingest, usually I think you have to deal the actual combat damage, which is a little different because it means then it's not always going to connect necessarily, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's when Ulamog attacks. So we should say we're not going to go through and read all these cards because we don't want to ruin our set review, which will come out the week after the pre-release when all the cards have been spoiled. So we're just going to talk in general terms about some of the exciting things. A lot of new Planeswalkers.
Yeah, a lot of new Planeswalkers. Everyone, I think, Obnixilus is back, and he's taking the place of Liliana because she's not on this realm at this time.
So are there going to be five? Because we know there's...
I think there's going to be five.
Kiora's representing two colors.
That's true.
So I don't know how that throws a wrench in the system because Gideon's there. So we've got white, black, green, and blue. Are we going to have a red one, or are they going to leave it at that? They don't always cover all the bases for Planeswalkers every set.
So Oath of the Gatewatch is the second half of the set. The block.
Oh, that's the name for the second?
Yeah, and there are pictures of Nissa, Jace, Gideon, and Chandra. So those should be in the set. Maybe not this one necessarily, but...
But in the block, at least.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, Kiora was... She throws a little monkey wrench in there because of the two-color thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what's going to happen. I know for a fact that they're going to do... I think they want to do five in general per set. I think that's the pattern that Wizards wants to keep up.
Interesting.
Very interesting indeed. Converge is the last new mechanic. You're going to like this one. It matters how many colors you use to spend on a card. So if you spend five colors to cast a five CMC spell, the Converge cost is five, and something magical happens with five.
Yes, I saw a couple of these cards, and I was like immediately going into Chromat and every five-color deck that I have.
Yeah.
There's an interesting sort of tutor-type card. This mechanic is very, well, I think it's awesome.
It's very Joshy, for sure.
Actually, there's one more mechanic, though.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
It's Awaken.
Awaken.
So there'll be a spell, and then it'll have an Awaken cost, so an alternative cost, similar to an Overload cost, or something like that. So if you pay the Awaken cost, then it puts a bunch of 1/1 counters onto one of your lands, and that land becomes a creature in addition to being a land.
Which is kind of cool. It's definitely going to see a lot of standard play, I think, because when you have extra mana to dump, these cards just become better because now they can do a second thing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And they are so in the flavor of Zendikar, you're bringing your land to life, and it's going to start to fight.
Yeah.
On your side. So Flavor Win definitely seems like a powerful mechanic.
Yeah, certainly.
I don't know if it's usable in EDH yet, but all very cool, very exciting things.
I think they will be if the main effect is powerful enough and you have the extra mana, because you definitely always have extra mana in EDH.
Yeah, and you might as well just make a 4/4 or whatever.
Yeah. There's going to be a new art book for Zendikar, which is kind of cool. You can pre-order it on Amazon right now, actually. It's like $35.99.
That's
Although no book promos. Back in the day, Wizards would include...
If there was a Mana Vault in there...
The best book promo of all time.
Yeah, then I would go ahead and buy 57,000 of those books.
Even if it was just a set of the full art lands from this, you know, from Zendikar, I would totally buy it.
Let's talk about the full art lands.
Yeah, there's new full art lands. They're actually reprinting some of the art, I think, but...
They'll have the new border or whatever.
Yeah, new border and stuff, and they look...
New font.
Beautiful. They look so cool. I'm super excited.
I know you're excited because you're like Mr. Foil Full Art Land guy.
I am Mr. Foil Full Art Land. I will totally first pick a Foil Full Art Land in a pack over a card that's good and limited if I'm drafting this set.
If it's Ulamog or a Foil Full Art Land.
Yeah. Ulamog's pretty good.
But he's not foil.
I know, right? He's not foil. If it was a foil Ulamog, sure. But I would take that land probably. And those lands from the other set are like all $10 to $15 now, so they're up there.
Even just the non-foils, I mean, aren't the non-foils still worth like a buck or something?
Mm-hmm. They're all worth a dollar.
So, I mean, it makes every pack just like automatically worth something, because in 3 or 4 years down the line, like those lands are going to be worth something.
Yeah, and there is a new set of lands in the set. I'll just read one of them. Prairie Stream. It enters the battlefield tapped unless you control two or more basic lands. And they all tap for two different colors, which is really cool. They're all the allied colors.
They're the allied or the enemy colors?
Allied. White, blue, blue, black, black, red, red, green, green, white.
Oh, so there's five?
There's five of those, and there's also going to be five enemy colored ones. So there's 10 total lands that cover both sides.
Oh, okay. So every color pairing is available in these lands
Correct.
Okay, so
it's a little complicated. So there's a set of five lands that care about basic lands and whether or not you have them, and if it comes into the battlefield tapped. And then there's a set of five other rare lands that are the enemy colors and are the quote-unquote man lands that people have been talking about.
Oh, I got you. So there's a man land cycle, and then there's this other cycle that checks if you have two basic lands.
Yep.
And if you do, then it comes in untapped. And if you don't, then it comes in tapped.
Yeah. And you've seen this on Twitter. People are arguing about the name.
Okay. So, So these lands that want you to have two basic lands in play already, this is a big debate on Twitter right now, which I walked into the middle of the other day because I didn't know what was going on. Because I just
totally
got back
pointless
from...
debate, by the way. It's just like, who cares?
Well, they're trying to decide what to call them.
Yeah.
And so there's been a whole bunch of names thrown out.
Tango Lands was the first big one because it takes two to tango, so having two basic lands, etc. But then people were like, well, if you don't live in America or the U.S., you're not really going to know what that means.
And also, it doesn't roll off the tongue. It's two syllables. All the other ones are like Bounce Land, Check Land,
Shock Land,
Pain Land, Shock Land. Those are one syllable. Man Land, that's a one syllable thing. Yeah, I agree. The professor from Tulare Community College, he was championing Landlands, which he says started out as a joke, but now he actually thinks it's good.
That's actually pretty good.
The Landlands. I just think it's a good idea, but it'll get confusing.
Yeah, it'll get very confusing. That's hilarious, though.
Wedge from the Mana Source was saying he wanted them to be Battle Lands.
Okay, because it's Battle for Zendikar.
I guess so, but you know, in two or three... Like, when someone's playing Modern in 3 years, it'll be weird calling them Battlelands because they don't have anything to do with battling.
Yeah.
That feels like a manland, kind of.
Yeah.
It's also
totally.
Got the two-syllable problem.
How about just basic lands? Because they care about basics.
Yeah, but we already have basic lands. They're called Forest, Swamp, and Island.
Right.
Yeah. I had a good one.
Oh, yeah?
You ready? I want to call them the Hadlands.
Hadlands, because you have to have...
Because if you played it out, you already had lands.
Well, and it cares if you have specific lands.
Maybe
too.
They should be Havelands.
Havelands?
Ooh, Havelands, not bad.
That's not bad.
Yeah, the Havelands.
Another big thing about these lands is that they all say the words Plains Island on them or Island Swamp.
Oh, that is actually huge because you can fetch them.
You can fetch them, yeah, totally. So,
and a lot of cards actually in Magic's past say go find a forest card.
Mm-hmm.
They don't say basic
the
forest.
The fetch lands say that as well, go find a forest, etc.
But even there's creatures like I think Wood Elves and some other ones say things like that. So that's actually a huge distinction.
It's going to make standard land building really interesting because now you can get these out, but they come into play tapped, whereas before you could only get a regular basic land with a fetch land.
True. And besides, screw standard, it's going to be awesome for us.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome for us. These are the lands that I think are perfect for EDH because we're not all of us are running around running a billion dual lands with different, you know.
It's really expensive to get a hold of shock lands, and dual lands are $100 plus. So these can do similar things. The downside is they're not going to be great in five color because they want you to have two basic lands.
Right.
Already.
But in terms of being able to
fetch out. But a three color deck?
Yeah.
They're great.
The fact that you can fetch out, for instance, if you're looking for a forest, you can get Cinderglade and Canopy Vista, depending on what your mana base is really important.
Totally. And, you know, if you have it in your opening hand, you can still play it turn one and it comes into play tapped. But if you don't have a one drop, it doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah.
So they're very, very good. I'm excited. Everybody knows I love lands. So these are great. Now let's talk about the Manlands.
Yeah, the Manlands. Really, although we were talking to Brian David Marshall, and he, because Manlands is
gender bias,
and there's no reason that these lands are man or not, you know, it's just they become a blue elemental creature or a black elemental creature, you know? So he was a proponent of the idea of...
Folklands.
Folklands, yeah, which I thought was kind of cool because it had like a story behind it. So they haven't spoiled all of these yet. There's Shambling Vent and Lumbering Falls. These are the enemy colors, so blue and green, or white and black. And they all have... They come into the battlefield tapped.
There's no way around that.
There's no way around that, yeah. But you can pay a certain amount of mana. Usually, it is actually going to be in the colors that the land taps for.
So you'd need both of the colors, and then sometimes some colorless?
Correct.
Gotcha.
Although, technically, you can tap itself to add that mana because you don't need to tap it to become this.
But then it can't
creature.
Attack or anything.
Yeah, it just becomes, I don't know why you would do that. But they all become different creatures with different relevant abilities to the colors. So the black-white land becomes a 2/3 white and black elemental creature with lifelink.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and then the green-blue one becomes a hexproof creature. So seems like it's really cool. It's a great way to use mana when you don't have stuff, and it's a great way to also play something that will help you over throughout the whole game in more ways than one.
Yeah, and the fact that they also tap for both colors is very powerful. we have a lot of lands like these already existing, and they see a lot of play in different decks. So these
Celestial Colonnade is like a huge one that sees a ton of play.
So these are just going to be more in that toolbox. It's pretty cool. Very excited about all these lands. I mean, I love lands just in general. So just more lands are awesome.
Yeah, and these are great just as like chump blockers if you ever need to.
If you ever have to, you can just, well, I can save myself. And, you know, people forget about them, too. So a lot of times they'll think they're swinging in to kill you, and that'll make them do something that leaves them maybe a little more open. And you go, ha, turn my thing into a guy.
Sucker.
Block.
What you gonna do?
And now I can crack back and kill you or something, yeah.
Yeah. All right, here's the most exciting part of the announcement.
This is a little bit crazy.
Yeah, it's Wizards has decided to insert random $100 bills into packs.
In the form of
Expeditions. Zendikar Expeditions, premium mythic rares. So they're all foil, they're all mythic rare, and it's about the same level rarity as a foil mythic, which happens like once every 2-3 boxes, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right, 'cause one every 9 packs is a mythic, and then a foil mythic is like one every 72, I don't know. There's some math that says like basically every 2 boxes or every 2.5 boxes or something.
Wizards has essentially said, look, we are going to reprint all the fetch lands and all the shock lands. We're just going to do it at a very top level rarity. They're all going to be worth a ton if you ever open one, but they're not going to be widely available, so it's not going to destroy prices either.
This shows a lot of different things, I think.
Yeah.
So it's an indicator of a lot of stuff. It's pretty interesting. first of all, if you didn't follow along before, the Zendikar fetch lands not being reprinted in this set was sort of a hot button issue about 3 weeks ago, right before I left, because they're very expensive and they're only continuing to grow in price.
And they shot up once people heard that they weren't going to be reprinted.
Because they're used in all the Eternal formats, and them not being available and not being printed here means when are they going to be printed? So now we're learning that they're going to sort of print them at this rarity. How long is this going to go on for, did they say?
It's definitely going to be in these next 2 sets. This block. So they're going to reprint in Battle for Zendikar. There are going to be 25 of them that are going to be reprinted. 2 sets of 10 and then 1 set of 5. And the 2 sets of 10 are going to be all of the fetch lands, all of the shock lands, and then all of the new 5 have lands, I guess we'll call them now.
The have lands.
I like it. It makes a lot of sense. You have to have lands in play.
So, so the Havlands were part of the Expeditions.
Yeah, so they're
part of the Expeditions. But they're also foil mythics?
Yeah, exactly.
Are they full art?
They are all full art. I mean, they're kind of full art. If you look at them, they're
like three quarters
full art. Yeah, there's been a lot of like, what the heck? Why don't you just make them full art and we can figure out the text ourselves?
That never works,
yeah. It's interesting because those are definitely way less value than opening like a Scalding Tarn foil, you know?
Yeah, and you have an equal chance to open one of the Havlands that you do a Scalding Tarn, but the Scalding Tarn is just going to be worth $150.
Yeah, technically you have a 10 out of 25 chance to open one of the OG fetch lands, and then
but one might be a Flooded Strand, which is not worth as much as
exactly.
Yeah. But so what?
This
is not taking a slot from anything else. Mm-hmm. This is just added value they're putting in that they don't have to.
Yep.
So pretty interesting, pretty cool.
Really cool.
It'll be interesting to see if they keep this up. Because if it's just for this block, I can't see, like, you're not adding very many to the world.
Yeah, and it's only very specifically these lands, too. I mean, I can't think of any other, like, what would they do for the next expedition, you know? Like, what's the next 10-card cycle?
But would it make sense to continue doing this expedition thing for the block after Zendikar? Because it feels like Zendikar's a block about lands, and so you can get away with this. But if you do the next block and you're going back to Innistrad, not predicting, just saying, as an example... would it make sense to do that? I don't think so.
Yeah. It would be interesting to see if they just choose the very high value targets and just choose to reprint, like, I don't know, Grizzlebrand, I guess. I can't think
just
of...
Snap.
Yeah, Snapcaster Mage, Lily specifically. It'll be interesting to see what they do.
But they're not going to be able to find 25 cards like that.
Yeah, maybe it'll be 10 cards or 5 even. Who knows? But I know this for sure. Wizards loves to make their fall set the biggest selling set, and they're going to do it again.
Yeah, that... I mean... I'm already thinking about buying like 2 cases of this now, because full art lands by themselves make it probably worth it. And now you've got a chance at foil fetch lands.
Jeez.
Foil full art, quote unquote, fetch lands.
Yeah.
I can't imagine the prices of these packs aren't going to be astronomical in 4 years or so.
Yeah, these have to go up unless, you know, save a zombie apocalypse happening. and no one playing Magic anymore.
But then who cares? You didn't need that money either.
That's true. And you can just hide away in your apartment and draft it all instead.
Unless you're like Seth Manfield and you have to pay for a college education in about like 17 years.
Then do not buy then, 8 cases of this. Yeah.
Although maybe actually, if you let's say he spent all 50K on boxes of Battle for Zendikar. By the time she's 18, or he, is it a boy or girl?
I don't know. I didn't research that far into it.
By the time the child is 18, much is... That 50K is probably worth 300K.
That's a brilliant idea.
Unless something happens and the game falls apart and then it's worth zero.
But then you can tell your kid, like, look, I took a risk. I did what I had to do.
So I'm sorry, but you have to go get a job in a coal mine now.
Coal? Yeah, because that will be around in 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
All right, so what we've learned here is Josh is not a very good financial analyst.
You're a financial analyst.
More like a gambler, so don't listen to me.
Yeah, definitely a gambler. Anyway, this is really exciting. I know for sure Reddit's going to be full of, like, look what I pulled, and it's going to be a sweet Misty Rainforest foil and all the
art. I'm
going
to be so excited for those people because it'll never be me. It'll be you. You always pull stuff.
Maybe. I don't know. You're going to buy 8 cases.
I'm not going to open any of them.
That's true.
Yeah. You always crack open the packs, so you will have more chances. And also, you're way luckier than I am. I can't wait.
You have that luck streak.
I can't wait until you open the Scalding Tarn. It's going to be sweet.
It's going to be super sweet.
I'm rooting for you, dude.
I'm rooting for myself, too, guys.
Let's talk about something weird here because it springs to my mind. Like, how does this work with legality? Are they all standard legal then?
They are not standard legal. They are in their own separate sets. They're only legal in the sets that currently have these cards.
So they're just legal as they are now.
Legal as they are,
It's almost as if they're not in the packs and you got them someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, got it.
So if you do crack one open in a draft, you can play it.
Oh, it's legal in the limited environment.
Legal in limited because it doesn't really affect it that much.
That's true.
It's a fetch land. You know, it's a shock land. It'll fix your mana a little bit. Yeah.
I rarely played my fetch lands in cons.
Yeah, me neither. I would just take it and be like, all right.
I'm taking my $20 bill, but I'm not going to play it. Yeah.
Hopefully this will come into play, but I don't really care because the power level's not that high anyway.
So what we're really setting up for is some sort of huge conspiracy at a finals in a GP when somebody takes a foil Scalding Tarn over that card that could be good in their deck.
Yep. It's gonna be Tarmogate all over again.
Yeah, but it'll be Scalding Gate.
Scalding Gate. Tarn Gate. It'll be Tarn Scalding. Yeah, Scalding Tarmogate.
Misty Gate.
Misty Gate. I like Misty Gate.
I like Havlands.
Havlands too. Yeah. Can we do it? Can we petition?
Can we do it, everybody? Havlands.
If you agree with Havlands, send us a tweet at CommandCast, and we'll see what kind of momentum we can get going for it.
Yeah, and just start tweeting out about Havlands.
Yeah, just even in completely non-contextual. Like, man, dinner was great tonight. Havlands.
That's awesome. Hashtag Havlands. Just randomly on your Twitter feed or your Facebook, just post a picture of one of the Havlands and just hashtag Havlands.
Yeah, or Hadlands. Whichever one you I think Havlands has a better ring to it.
I think so too.
Is a little like Hadlands.
And it makes more sense. If you want to play it, you have to already have lands.
Yeah, well, you can still play it. It just won't, you know.
Yeah, if you want it to be good, if you don't want it to be a Guildgate.
Oh, yeah, it's just a nice, rare Guildgate otherwise. Anyway, there are tons of Battle for Zendikar spoilers. You guys can check them out by just going and visiting the sites that have them. Devoid is cool, the new creature type. They're colorless, but they have colored mana symbols on them. And there are a lot of cards that are colorless matters cards.
Oh, yeah, I saw this. So it will cost like 2 and 2 black, but it'll say devoid.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore the creature costs black mana, but it's actually a colorless creature.
It is devoid of color.
Does that mean that Iona doesn't stop it?
It
I think
should.
So.
Should. Yeah, I think
because
they will get around
that. Because you can't cast spells of that color.
That color. Yeah, and she can't name colorless.
Oh, man, are there any kill spells that are...
There is one. It's really good. It's called Titan's Presence. It's an uncommon.
Okay, read it.
This is going to see play. This is by far my favorite card out of the entire set so far. It's going to see play everywhere.
Okay.
It's a 3-drop. Uh-huh. As an additional cost to cast Titan's Presence, reveal a colorless creature card from your hand.
Okay.
So it could be Ulamog. It could also be one of these colorless, devoid creatures.
What's the casting cost?
3.
3 and what?
Just that's it. 3 colorless.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Exile target creature if its power is less than or equal to the revealed card's power.
That's hard with the Iona, though. She's like an 8-8 or something.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you'd have to like do an Ulamog.
It has to be Ulamog or Blightsteel.
But I mean,
or something.
Like, this
that's
card
still
is
a sweet. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a kill card for 3 colorless mana. If you have any of these colorless, like a lot of these cards are all like 4 or 5 or whatever. Like, exile a creature with 4 power. Like, that's insane.
That seems pretty good. It also can go in the mono decks in EDH.
Yeah.
And maybe help us with this Iona problem because they wanted to reprint her twice.
Yeah. There's also this thing called Hedron Network, which is a 4-drop artifact, and when it enters the battlefield, exile all creatures with power 5 or greater.
As long as it's on the battlefield.
So that's an Iona killer.
There you go.
I like how we're just focusing on what can kill Iona.
Well, there's just this influx of them right now. So, and also colorless, that's one of the first things I think of.
Oh, I got you something from PAX, actually. I should give it to you.
I got you something from Korea.
Oh, snap.
I should give it to you, but I'll give it to you tomorrow night when we play.
Is it bibimbap?
No, but the bibimbap was really good.
God.
It's nothing. We have really good Korean food, actually, in LA.
In LA, yeah.
It's actually maybe the best place besides Korea for Korean food in the world. But our bibimbap is not even close to as good as theirs, and I don't know why. Our Korean barbecue is as good.
You know, I think there is, and we'll talk more about this on the inside, but water affects how rice is cooked. And I bet they just have better water and better cooking techniques for rice.
Definitely possible, because our water sucks in L.A.
Yeah, people actually import water for bagel shops here.
Yeah, especially from New York.
Yeah, especially from New York.
Because people want those New York bagels. Okay, that was a cool side note.
Fat packs.
This is interesting.
Fat pack. Valfor Zendikar. The package of lands is all going to be full art lands.
What?
Yeah, it was the same in Zendikar as well. They didn't confirm it until like a couple weeks ago.
I didn't hear this.
Every single fat pack is going to increase in value by like $15, $20.
Okay, hold on.
Immediately.
Let's rewind to the part where I said I was going to buy like 8 cases. I'm just going to take that amount. Hey, Seth Manfield, I changed my mind. All fat packs.
Because you guarantee get all those sweet lands and you get the boosters.
How many lands come in a fat pack? 50?
I think it's about 50,
10 of each? Listen, we did not fact check that, so whatever it is, and you're yelling at us if it's not 50, it's around 50. That's
pretty
50
sweet.
Bucks.
Yeah.
At least.
Well, right now it'd be...
No, but I mean in a couple years.
Exactly.
Like, full art lands are just, they have value. We know this.
Yep.
Wow.
Pretty sweet, right?
Pretty awesome. I'm actually very excited. I need to go pre-order like a million fat packs.
Yep.
I hope they'll sell for MSRP still.
You know, you can just go to Target, Walmart, all those places sell for MSRP no matter what.
Yeah, that's
online,
a good point.
Online, you're going to find harder prices.
Please check your LGS first and see what their prices are. And I think we like to support our LGSs because you can't go play the game at Target. So if you go and buy all your stuff at Target and not your local gaming store, that's going to put your local gaming store out of business.
Yeah.
And then where are you going to go play Magic? But I think you're justified in doing it if the LGS is jacking the price on the stuff because you can't
Or if they sell out, which I think a lot of them will.
Yeah, so... All right, Target. Good tip.
Target, Walmart, any place that sells cards for MSRP. All right. Oh, another announcement outside of all the sweet Battle for Zendikar stuff.
Everyone's like, just talk about your spoiler already.
Yeah, spoiler. Give me the spoiler. It's like, come on, guys. We're only 37 minutes and we're fine. There's a new prize structure for GPs.
There's a new prize structure?
Mm-hmm.
Is it like more money?
More money. First place gets $10,000.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. This is directly because of Goyfgate, right?
I don't know, maybe. I mean, I feel like Wizards has been thinking about doing this kind of thing for a while, and everyone's like, hey, did you guys see the Dota 2 tournament where they gave away 80 million, like, you know, like,
yeah.
Yeah. So I think it all kind of is adding to the
And the Goyfgate thing was a lot about, like, well, of course he's doing that because winning the tournament isn't even worth that much money.
Yeah, exactly. So...
At 10 grand, you know, Dota 2 did, like, 20 million. We're at 10 grand.
It's also going to make GPs way bigger, which is exciting.
Although, let's be fair, Dota 2 doesn't do that tournament, like, every weekend.
Yeah.
And there's a GP. There's multiple GPs sometimes.
Yeah.
On the same weekend.
I think the big thing was that they could afford it. They just hadn't been increasing the prize payouts. And they are finally taking steps towards that. And... Every single place past that gets more money, too, so it's great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and you get, like, $250 if the GP's 3,000 people are bigger and you're, like, 50th place and stuff. So, like, even placing not as high as the top 8 or whatever, you're still going to get a payout, which is kind of sweet.
This is going to be really awesome when you or I win a GP.
Insert laughter here. Speaking of GPs that we can compete in, GP LA is May 20th to the 22nd, 2016, that we will probably compete in.
We're definitely there.
Yeah, we're definitely there. Whether or not we're playing well is to be seen.
There's a really good chance I'm there, but not even playing in the main event. So
yeah,
but there's almost no chance we're not at it.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be May 20th, Modern. So for sure, Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman should be there.
Yep.
It's going to be really exciting for them to talk about that as well.
So book your trip if you want to come hang out, play some EDH with us.
For a show.
Maybe we'll do some type of gathering. That'd be sweet.
That'll be awesome. And then GP Portland, which some of the people have been asking us about.
Because, my hometown?
Yeah, it's the West Coast, is August 12th through the 14th, and that's standard. I want more limited GPs.
Because I can play in those.
Yeah,
yeah,
I can play
exactly.
in those. Yeah, the investment is way less.
These are both in 2016?
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Coming up. We're not making a promise, but we'll probably be at GPLA.
GPLA, I would just a shade under promise. It's like 90% that we'll be there.
Yeah, unless we're doing something.
Like, I don't know what else.
Yeah, I don't know what else either. I mean, I could be on a trip somewhere.
Yeah, that's true. You could go to Asia.
I could go to Asia,
yeah. Fair enough.
I like how we're just sitting here being like, not spoiling the card yet. it's on the outline. We're looking at it. It's like, spoil the card.
Okay, let's do it.
All right.
So we got an awesome exclusive. This is the first time anybody's ever talked about this card publicly.
Yes.
Jimmy, do the honors.
I'm so honored. Sanctum of Ugin.
Ugin.
Ugin is on the card. He's like in the background, like looking up epically at a little hedron floating in front of him.
The MTA, Magic the Amateuring, girls would call it Sanctum of Eugene.
Yeah. So would Doc. Sanctum of Eugene is a land, not a legendary land, just a land. It's rare. You tap it to add one colorless to your mana pool.
That's it. Just kidding.
Bomb dropped. All right, here's the big one. Whenever you cast a colorless spell with converted mana cost 7 or greater, you may sacrifice Sanctum of Ugin. If you do, search your library for a colorless creature card, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library.
Wow. So you cast a artifact or otherwise colorless spell that costs 7 or more.
Mm-hmm.
You can even tap the Sanctum of Ugin as part of that mana cost because
yes, totally.
You can then sacrifice the Sanctum of Ugin. You don't have to tap it to sack it, so it can be your seventh land. And then you tutor for a colorless creature card of any cost.
Any cost, which is awesome. You can get Duplicate. You can get
Ulamog. Blightsteel Colossus.
Yeah.
Memnarch.
I made a list of colorless spells.
Yeah, Memnarch counts. Yeah,
I think so. Because he doesn't cost.
Oh, it's only it's only the EDH rule that makes him blue. It's not actually the rule. Yeah.
So Akroma's Memorial will trigger this. All is Dust will trigger this, which is cool. Everyone sacks everything, and then you get to play your giant thing whenever you search it out. You know,
that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, Blightsteel Colossus of course will trigger this.
Yeah, Ulamog.
Ulamog. Karn Liberated, the Planeswalker.
Will Ugin?
Ugin will do it as well.
Those are all cards that are played in a lot of decks.
Yeah, Spine of Ishsaw will do it as well. That was included in a lot of the Commander of 2015 decks, or 2014. Platinum Angel.
Can't lose
the game. And you get something sweet.
This card just seems really good.
Yeah, Memnarch, Eldrazi Conscription, Elbrus the Binding Blade. All of the Eldrazi, pretty much, will trigger this.
This just seems really, really good.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's just like a land that will
just
always...
free value.
Free value, yeah.
And The opportunity cost is just so low.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it still taps for a colorless. It doesn't even come into play tapped.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's just not much cost associated with just replacing one of your lands with it. I mean, maybe in a five-color
deck. Yeah.
Even then, I would do it because you're usually fine on colors in a five-color deck as long as you just run mostly, you know.
And the level of things it can tutor out are all very powerful. In general, like
super powerful.
Artifact creatures are all amazing.
All those things you mentioned, besides All Is Dust and Karn and Ugin, are creatures. Oh,
yeah.
I guess Karn Liberated. Yeah.
You could do the original Karn,
yeah,
I think. But I don't know if you
can. No, I think he doesn't. You can tutor for any casting cost.
Correct.
So you can actually tutor for a creature that costs.
You can play
only
Karn
five.
Liberated and find the original Karn.
Just to be like, what's up now?
Yeah. Although. I don't know if the legendary rule makes you sacrifice one. I don't think it does, actually.
You just wait till one dies. It goes to your hand, so.
Yeah, exactly. If it put it into the battlefield, that would be insane. I think that would actually be on the
it'd be totally broken.
It'd be broken, yeah.
It's already pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Tutors, as we know, very powerful in
very
our
powerful.
Format.
Tutors on a land that tap for mana that come into play untapped, that's amazing. That's just pure upside.
Yeah.
That's great.
I can't imagine, not running this in a lot of decks. Maybe not every deck, but a lot.
Yeah, and there's just so many good things you can do with this. Like, if you cast this Kozilek draw you cards, Kozilek's draw you card, right?
Yeah.
So you can cast Kozilek, and in response to the trigger of him making you draw cards, you sacrifice this, find the card, guarantee that you're not going to draw it in those top four, and then you draw the cards off it.
Seems
like,
good.
There's just lots of cool stuff you can do here, like five cards off Kozilek now instead of four or whatever. Even just grabbing a Memnarch is amazing.
Yeah, just tutoring for whatever you need in that moment.
I really like All Is Dust plus this because you really set yourself up for a really strong board presence and you
plus,
wipe out a bunch of stuff.
We've already seen a whole bunch of cards in Battle for Zendikar that are colorless.
Yep.
That either trigger this or you can go get off of it. utility creatures and things like that.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see the other colorless creatures sort of get spoiled here, because there's the Void Winnower, which you can grab and also triggers this. It's a new Eldrazi that's just insane.
It's insane.
Yeah.
Look it up. We'll talk about it in our set review.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Sanctum of Ugin. It looks like it's here to stay.
Yep, and it looks like just, even if it doesn't make it into every deck, if you have a deck with three or four more possible targets for this, feels like it's totally worth it. Especially if you're playing like an artifact-based deck, or it's just something that is able to cast large colorless creature cards or mm-hmm. colorless whatever cards.
I mean, this is a cool list you put down. So many of these are just in decks. Yeah, Mere Battlesphere is in there.
Mm-hmm.
Pentavis.
Colossus of Akros, I love. I think that card's in the Overperformer.
Just Artisan of Kozilak.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah, this card seems good.
Seems
just
very
Ulamog's
good.
Crusher will do it. I mean, I have that in a couple of decks.
Yeah, and I guarantee you it's not really going to see too much play in Standard and all that.
You never know.
You never know, because Ugin is a card that gets played. Actually, you know what? I could see this being in control decks easily.
My prediction is that they made a set with a bunch of giant Eldrazi in it. They're going to want to see those on camera at the Pro Tour. They're going to have designed this set so that you can play these big, huge things. I bet this card sees some play.
Unless Red Deck wins, just takes the day because everyone's trying to play nine drops.
Yeah, that's a good point. They'll put something in the set that takes care of Red Deck, or at least gives you a shot.
Yeah. Sort
Jimmy,
of all his dust effect.
Jimmy the Red. Just,
what?
Just calm down. Just
simmer down over
just
there.
Simmer down there, Mr. Red. Jeez, let a guy dream.
That's true. I would actually, I love Red, but I would totally want to just play this and use it in a game. It would be amazing.
It would be amazing. Somebody will.
Somebody will, yeah, somebody for will. Sure, for sure.
They probably won't be in the finals of that tournament, but in round three or four, they'll do it.
Yeah, Sanctum of Ugin. Eugene is back. He's in his Sanctum. He's summoning something totally sweet whenever you cast a giant colorless card with converted mana cost 7 or greater. Very cool.
You can see the, what we'll do is we'll post the picture of the card in the show notes
mm-hmm.
on rocketjump.com, so if you want to take a look at it, you can find it there. I'm sure it'll be on Mythic Spoiler by now.
It'll also be in our video, so you can see it there as well.
We'll probably plaster it on Twitter, so go ahead and follow us there. Go find it on YouTube. Check out the Rocket Jump page. Yeah, and those of you that are listening to the show for the first time just because of the spoiler, hopefully you stick around, check out some of our other episodes.
Yeah.
We
talk about EDH mostly. This is more of a catch-up episode because there's just so much that has happened.
Yeah, this is not indicative of how our episodes normally go, but I'm having fun.
I'm having fun too. It's great talking about the Havlands, you know.
The Havlands.
Just throwing it in there one more time.
Even if you don't listen to the show all the time, let's make the Havlands happen.
Yeah, I'm all about that. I really enjoy that name quite a bit. Yeah, that's our card. Thank you, Wizards of the Coast, for giving us another preview card. That's awesome. We had a card for C14, we had one for the last set, and we had one for this set. So
I'm looking forward to our preview card now from Oath of the Gatewatch.
Yeah. And if we're keeping with tradition, all of our cards have something to do with like mana cost 7 or higher usually.
Yeah, they know. They actually, for Magic Origins, they gave us the Great Aurora, and they said, I can't think of a more EDH card than this.
Yep.
Or they said Commander, I think. That's Wizards doesn't call it EDH. We'll probably, hopefully, have the Commander product in between there, actually.
That would be amazing. Actually, I think that might be something they do at the Community Cup as well, potentially, because they have
sweet.
Me and Staborski coming in, and we're both Commander people. So maybe we'll do some kind of
Commander-related. I hope so. So another reason to watch the Community Cup, because maybe we get some Commander-specific info in there.
Yeah, we know Wizards is definitely all about supporting that now.
Yeah.
And I love seeing pictures of employees being like, Commander Night! Because it's like their breakaway from, you know, like rigorous standard testing or modern and all that.
Yeah, the more Wizards people that we talk to, many, many of them play Commander, and they definitely play in the building. So it's something that's definitely on their radar and they're supporting, which is awesome.
Super, super awesome.
All right, ready for the end step?
Let's talk about the end step. Something cool outside the world of Magic. In this case, it is Asia. All of Asia.
It is just a lot of it, not all of it. But, well, I didn't go to China, which is sort of maybe the biggest part of Asia, or India.
China's aight.
Yeah.
You have to choose where you go in China specifically.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. That's a trip. Japan's a trip. Australia's a trip.
Yeah.
India's probably a trip. But this one was 6 days in Seoul. It was
That's
three,
the name of a movie right there.
6 days in Seoul. 3 days in, sorry, 4 days in Singapore.
Nice.
And then we took a cruise from Singapore where we stopped in Bangkok, Thailand, a place called Koh Samui, Thailand. We went to Cambodia.
Cool.
A town called Sihanoukville.
Ooh, nice.
Then we went to Vietnam, and we went to Nha Trang and Ho Chi Minh City, okay. also known as Saigon, or as the locals call it, Shigon.
Oh, really? Shigon.
That's how they pronounce it.
That's cool.
So I'm from Oregon, and we pronounce it differently than a lot of the rest of the country. So
Oregon, you mean?
Yeah. So and Oregon is correct, so I'm going to just assume that Shigon is correct, because the people from the place know how to pronounce it.
Yep.
Awesome trip. I can't talk about the whole thing. We ate amazing food in all places.
Looks like you guys ate like kings and queens. Oh my
gosh. If you followed my Twitter feed, then my feed basically turned into a food blog for like 3 weeks with
no complaints here.
Yeah. So just to run that down really quick, Seoul has amazing fried chicken.
Yes, the best in the world, right?
It was incredible. I was like, fried chicken? I mean, you know, we're from the States. We got good fried chicken. Yeah. Like down in the South, they got crazy for good.
No.
Seoul will give it a run for its money. The best places anywhere. It's crazy. I don't know the texture of the way they fry it. I think it's tempura.
Mm-hmm.
At least tempura influenced more. Super tasty. They have all these different sauces that go on it, and gosh, it's so good. Obviously, Korean barbecue there. Very good. Singapore was like best place in the world for food. A few of our listeners had said that to me, and I was skeptical. I mean, I've eaten in LA is a really good place for food. Vegas is a really good place for food. New York, amazing place for food. I've been to Italy, known for food. Singapore blows them away.
Jeez.
It's not even close. They just have such a wide variety of different things, and they have their own fusion things. There's Malaysian food and Thai food and Chinese food, and Singapore has its own types of food. People have heard of things like chili crab. They have thing that's called carrot cake, which I think is actually like...
Not carrot cake, but...
No, it's like radish. It's like fried radishes and eggs and stuff. I don't know what it is, but it's amazing.
You're killing me right now. This sounds so good.
Chicken rice, which is like your favorite.
Oh, yeah. I love chicken rice.
Maybe the best place in the States for chicken rice is actually near my house. It's a place called Savoy.
Yeah.
I've gone there a couple times. Not my favorite. I know you love it.
Yeah. I mean, I can tell, like, if I had to give it a true grade, it'd be like a 7.5 out of 10, probably.
But in the States, it's known as very, very good. The line's usually out the door. It's like the best place for chicken rice, at least on the West Coast. I never loved it. I thought it was fine. Singapore chicken rice. Oh, I just blew out the microphone. Singapore chicken rice is amazing. We were there.
Oh, my gosh.
We were there for 4 days. I had it at least four times.
Really? Oh, wow. You can tell something's that good if you go back to it, even though you want to try new stuff. You're like, no, that... taste.
I mean, I would order something new and chicken rice, because I'm like, I need some chicken rice because it's amazing. We had one of our listeners, Siobhan Bhatt, is Indian, and he recommended this place called Banana Leaf Apollo.
You made it there?
Yeah, which he said was the best Indian food in the world.
Nice.
That's what he said. Now, I haven't eaten Indian food in India, places, so I can't say that, but it was the best Indian food I've ever had, and it was actually the best meal we had on the entire trip.
Wow.
It was a fish head curry. They serve your food on a banana leaf with no plates or anything.
It doesn't leak. It's
no
perfect.
No silverware. So you just take everything, put it onto the banana leaf, and just eat it with your hands in traditional Indian style. A little bit through, we had to ask for silverware. I'm sorry. I'm not Indian, and I wasn't going to turn into an Indian person during that meal. And it was just so messy. I couldn't figure out how to do it correctly.
Yeah.
So, but...
Just for your mental health, you had to have a couple of...
Also, I had like a little cut on one of my fingers.
Oh, you're dipping it into curry.
And it was spicy. And it was just like every time I went to dip it, it just hurt my hand so much that eventually I was like, I had to bite the bullet and be like...
But your hand was like, this tastes delicious.
Yeah. I was like, I got to keep eating it, but ow.
Yeah. That's incredible. Well, thanks, Siobhan. That's awesome.
Yeah, Siobhan, that was a really good recommendation. If you're ever in Singapore, Banana Leaf Apollo has to be on your list. We're getting kind of long here, so I'll end with the highlight of the trip. Well, two things. One was I met up with a local EDH group
in Korea,
in Seoul, that listens to the Command Zone. So I had been exchanging emails with a couple of listeners.
That is so freaking cool,
man. And I actually
cool,
found, yeah, their LGS went down. Didn't have time to play, but I did meet with them. You know, I wanted to pick up some Korean magic swag, and it was cool to meet those guys and watch them play and everything. So that was a lot of fun. And then the big highlight of the trip, everyone's been asking me, what was the single thing that was the biggest highlight of the trip? And it was
the sun. It was the brightest thing. It's terrible.
It was hot as hell.
Yeah.
Because we went in August, and it was like 92 and 90% humidity every day. That was brutal. The highlight of the trip was North Korea.
North Korea.
So we took a tour to North Korea. So you get on a bus and you go through all the stop checkpoints and everything, and you eventually get to what's called the joint security area, mm-hmm. which is the area where the both nations, South Korea and North Korea, have buildings right near the border, and you can literally go up and cross into North Korea. There's a neutral buildings that are straddling the border between both countries. Wow. And you go inside one of the neutral buildings, and you can step into North Korea. Now, what made this the highlight of the trip and something that was pretty crazy is that 2 days, no, 1 day before we took our tour, the North Koreans had allegedly sneaked across the border to South Korea and planted some landmines. And the South Korean soldiers on patrol had actually run into the landmines, and a couple of them had died.
What?
So the South Koreans were really mad about this at this time.
Of course you. Oh, my God.
So in response to that, South Korea decides that what they have is on the border, all along the 150-mile border, or 150 kilometers or whatever it is, they have these big banks of speakers.
Uh-huh.
And these haven't been used in a decade, but what they used to do, the South Koreans, is they would blare propaganda across at the North Korean soldiers, and they would say things like, Kim Jong-un now,
yeah,
is, you know, a bad leader, and he's doing this stuff, and you should come defect, and if you defect, we'll give you a house and a car and a job, and, you know, and they would just blare this propaganda 24/7 at the North Koreans to try and get them to come over and defect, and if they didn't, it would still just drive them nuts because it's just loud stuff coming at you. Well, they had agreed to stop doing that about 10 years ago. Well, they started it up again because they were mad about this landmine situation. So the North Koreans were mad about the propaganda machines. So we're there the day after this mine explosion.
Jeez.
We step across into North Korea in one of these neutral buildings, and the North Koreans come marching out. So the North Korean soldiers come marching out. They line up, you know, within 1 foot on their side of the border, and they're staring in the windows of the building that we're in at us. We're with some South Korean soldiers, and they have a rule that they're not allowed, if the North Korean soldiers are there, to take their eyes off the North Korean soldiers. So they all turn, and they're death staring each other through the window.
And you're just
out at
there.
The guys. Yeah, and we're like, what do we do? And we have one American soldier with us who is our tour guide, and he's like, this doesn't happen very often. He's like, I don't know, you can take us some pictures. So we got some pictures of the North Korean soldiers.
You can take some pictures. Oh my gosh.
So I got some sweet pictures of the North Korean soldiers within a death stare with the South Korean soldiers.
Wow.
What we call the ROK soldiers, the ROK, Republic of Korea. That was pretty sweet. So we go, we leave the place. The next day after we left the tour, the North Koreans decided to launch a missile at the speakers that were shooting.
To blow up the speakers?
They want to blow up the speakers because they're tired. They don't want the propaganda.
Yeah, yeah.
The South Koreans see the missile coming. They fire artillery across the border at where the missile came from.
Uh-huh.
In response, North Korea mobilizes its army and starts to say that they're going to be on a wartime footing.
Right, right.
You know, and so there's all this crazy stuff going on. You know, we're watching the news every night, like, is the North Korean army mobilizing and whatever and freaking out? And then, of course, we're asking people in Seoul, like civilians, Koreans, and
they're like, nah.
They're like, this happens all the time. Don't worry about it. You know, we're like, we're from the States. This does not happen.
Yeah, this is beyond crazy.
Yeah. The other thing I should mention is that the bomb in Bangkok.
Yes.
So there was an explosion in Bangkok, if you hadn't heard, at one of the Hindu temples.
A very public.
Huge tragedy.
Location as well, specifically targeted towards foreigners, I think.
Yeah, it was a part of town that is the most sort of frequented by tourists. A bomb went off, blew up a temple. A lot of people were killed and injured. Big tragedy. And then the very next day, somebody threw a bomb on a bridge in Thailand, which is also another touristy area. Fortunately, the bomb like bounced into the river and went off and nobody was hurt.
Oh, geez.
But that was a second bomb attack in 2 days. And when we went to Bangkok, only I think it was 4 or 5 days later, we actually stayed in a hotel that was a block and a half from where that second bomb went off.
My God.
Yeah. Luckily, I believe they caught the guy who they think set off the bomb.
Mm-hmm.
They caught another guy who was involved. Anyway, that was after we left. But
my God.
Yeah. It was a lot of scary stuff going on while we were there. Luckily, nothing happened to us, and it was great.
Yeah, I'm lucky. You're going to pull all the expeditions after that. Holy crap, dude.
No, I used all my luck. Now you can use
all
the expeditions.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, while you regain your HP, your luck HP. Yeah, for sure. Holy moly, dude. That is That's unbelievable.
Yeah, pretty cool. So, I mean, not cool that all that stuff happens.
Cool story. Yeah, that isn't... That's
the trip itself intense. Was cool. Yeah, but a lot of stuff was happening around it, which made it pretty intense.
Right, for sure.
Yeah, stuff we'll never forget. I would be remiss in also saying that Vietnam, the pho soup was as amazing as you think it would be. And the banh mi sandwiches...
Oh, gosh.
...were a million times better than what we have over here. And I have a banh mi place like every block in my neighborhood.
For sure.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. And they also cost like 89 cents. So...
Yeah, the conversion rate's pretty good over in Asia.
It's pretty good.
Every time I went to China, I'd be like, lunch costs 50 cents today. And I was like, yeah, that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And the dollar's strong right now, so.
Well, that's amazing. Your trip sounded like it was fantastic. I'm actually going to Bali in December with my parents. So I'm
very
excited
exciting.
To
How
sample.
Long?
For a week, and then Hong Kong for a week. So we're going to eat like kings and queens.
That's hopefully. Right. Those are two awesome places. Make sure you have chili crab in Bali. Here.
Chili crab? Okay, yeah. I'll make sure I'll tell my mom that. She is a big foodie.
So. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I've met your parents at a restaurant that's my favorite restaurant in
LA. Oh, that's right. So. Yeah, and my mom loved it, so she agrees.
She may trust me?
Yeah, she totally trusts you. Yeah. All right. And she's very, I mean, just my mom. She's very, like, no.
She knows, because we went to that restaurant, and she was literally, like, tasting stuff and going, like, this is what's in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stuff that I'd eaten 1,000 times. I was like, really? It has taro? She's like, yeah, this part. And I'm like, wow. So yeah, your mom knows her stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's fantastic. I'm glad you're safe and sound. I'm glad you're back in the United States and not, I don't know, on the side of a road somewhere in the North Korean border. Yeesh. Some intense stuff out there, guys. That was cool. You got to go to the LGS as well in Korea.
Very cool.
Korean cards are actually, like, there were some of the more expensive, rare sort of, foreign cards or Korean cards and
Japanese
and Russian.
The Asian cards, yeah. The Korean cards are pretty rare, too. I learned they don't make a lot of them. Mm-hmm. A lot of the product that gets released is not available in Korean at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah, things like that. So, cool. But don't worry, I got you some.
Oh, sweet. I'm very excited. I got you something, too.
Oh.
It's not Korean.
Oh.
All right. Let's move on to the cleanup step. Make sure you guys check out our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern. Ben Bateman, Alex Kessler, talk about modern. They've had some amazing guests on recently. Tom Rapel was just on talking about the design of Magic over the years and stuff. Yeah, check it out. Patrick Chapin was on recently, too. You can find them at the MMCast on Twitter and also rocketjump.com/the MMCast, and you can listen to their podcast there.
Our editor is Eli Cuevas, and special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the Living Card animations. You can find him at Living Cards MTG.
Oh, also, I should mention many thanks to everyone that's emailed us these past few weeks. You guys,
The Mingo Malingo cards that everybody sent us. That was awesome.
We can't get to everyone's emails just because we have a bunch of deck doctors coming in at the same time, but we do try and read all of them, and we appreciate all the stuff that you guys send in. Someday we'll start going through and clearing all that stuff out as well. Dan Locke, who also sent Josh all those cool tokens, also sent me this really cool, you can hear it, it's a custom 3D life counter.
Yeah, he made it out of course, some mountains.
Yeah, from Origins, and it looks really cool. There's all these layers and stuff. This thing is awesome. I'm really excited to start using this.
Yeah, pretty, pretty sweet. Dan, you're awesome.
Yeah, you're awesome.
Making cool stuff.
We have some great fans.
Yeah,
we've got some incredibly awesome, dedicated fans, and you guys help make this show better. So always many thanks to you guys for being there.
I will also say comments on Rocket Jump and YouTube and everything, we've probably been a little light on responding because I've been gone. So half of our responding team has been gone. So we've probably responded to only half as much stuff. Yeah. For that, I apologize, but we'll be back on the rails now.
Yep, back on rails. That sounds bad. Like, we just can't do anything but stay on the rails. Like, ah.
Oh, and after having said that, we should say there's only going to be one episode this week.
Oh, yes. If you guys are still listening, I bet a lot of people tune out as soon as they hear. Listen to our sister podcast. Yeah.
All right. So, if you're still listening, I mean, we should just give them, like, another 30 seconds of content just because thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you for sticking around all the time. Hey, maybe this happens in more episodes. You guys have to go back and listen. Actually, no, this is the first
We're
time.
Like those little spoiler scenes after Marvel movies.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, we're the post-credit scene. Who's going to be Thanos?
I don't know.
I think you're Thanos.
I am?
Yeah.
Okay.
You look more like Thanos to me.
Do I have, a bigger chin?
Yeah, you got a giant chin. Is it Josh Brolin? Who is it? I don't know who plays Thanos.
I think it's Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Josh, there you go.
Oh,
that's
there
why.
You go. Who that's does that why. Make you?
James, Jimmy. I'm Quicksilver, I guess. I don't know. He was in the post-credit scene. He's dead now, though. Spoilers. Oh, God. You get extra content and spoilers.
Oh,
not the
man.
Right kind of spoilers.
Sorry if you haven't seen Ant-Man. Don't worry, I covered it. It's
good. Nice, good call.
Okay.
All right.
That was way more than 30 seconds, so you got more than your money's worth. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And we will see you next week.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.